There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people. So when we needed them, they could fight the battles that we never could. Gentlemen, what are you prepared to do?
That's a very unorthodox way of doing it. Kyle, we are back together again. And we finally get to talk about the Avengers. I lied to any audience members that are still with us in stating that we would do two episodes or two movies per episode. And that is all my fault. So I'm going to take all the blame. Caring for my son. No guilt trip here. But, you know, there's times where you got to be a dad. You got to step up and be a dad. You know, anybody can be, what is it, a daddy? Not everybody can be a father. I fucked it up. Anyway.
Anybody can be Iron Man, you know, but not everybody can be a daddy.
I guess that's the one. That's the lesser known one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Today we were talking about Avengers. Came out in 2012. Everything that we've discussed has led up to this. The coming together of Earth's greatest heroes.
And was definitely a very risky film for its time, because nobody had ever done anything like this. Like, there were even articles about, oh, how are you going to have so many A-list actors together? They're all going to want the spotlight. This is never going to work. Like, they're never going to play well together. Oh, boy, did it play well together.
Well, that, and they were basically saying, you know, hey, we're setting up the future to have more of these team-up movies, and we're going to have more single origin stories or continued, like, whether it's the runner-up or the trilogy to, you know, Iron Man and Thor. I mean, so many things were coming after this that, to your point, a risk in, like, what the future could look like. And it was, watching this movie, there were so many good parts that I really enjoyed. And the humor starts coming out in the MCU in this film, for sure. Yeah,
there were great moments. Like, the forest scene is one of the ones that people really gravitate to, because you've got Thor, Loki, Iron Man, you know, doth mother know you weareth her drapes, for like Shakespeare in the Park and everything. That was the one that kind of really started the humor, was this, because it all seemed like they were all having fun on set too, because you could see just like the comedic timing was so on point for so many of these scenes. And so they probably, yeah, oh God, probably one take, I'd imagine, for all that stuff. I don't know how they kept it together.
Oh, yeah. Well, Tony Stark really, I mean, you know, RDJ comes to play in this with his humor. Just the helicarrier scene when he is first on it, and he's doing the thing where he's looking around and he's like, how does Nick look at all this with one eye? And like, just his overall presence. And then when he yells and screams out, that man's playing Galaga. And then later, Joss Whedon following up with that guy sneaking and like clicking it back onto that screen where he's playing Galaga. Like, that, all that stuff was just so great. But there was a lot of tension in this movie too, in the fact that Loki is, as we will see, Loki basically starts all the devastation that we see throughout the universe moving forward. He's the first person to introduce, is kind of, as a lackey to Thanos. And bringing the Chitauri to New York. But he did this all because, you know, he wanted to be king and he thought he should be king, even though he was a little blue baby that was adopted. Yeah. So, again, if you're not watching these movies or you're watching them by themselves, you will think that Loki is the bad guy. But again, he's just this like lackey. I like Tom Hiddleston, but he is not this prominent, like, dominant character if you watch everything leading up to it and then post.
Yeah, he's Thanos' means to an end, because Thanos knew there were Infinity Stones on Earth. And so he wanted, say, Earth to get a little bit weaker before he came in to grab them in the first place. And so, we all know Loki was just being used by him even in that regard. Because, yeah, and so Loki just ends up in a bad way throughout the MCU. All he wanted to do was just be respected. That's almost like his whole thing.
And everybody says he might come back. I mean, if they do flashbacks, you know, post Infinity War, I mean, I just watched Infinity War the other night with my son, and his neck gets demolished. Yeah. I mean, he crushes his neck. There's no resurrection.
By that time, Thanos has got the Power Stone, so like he's literally the strongest thing in the universe. There's no amount of trickery that's going to make you go, ha ha, you can't snap my neck, even though you can crush a moon. I think he's done for. And I'm pretty sure Tom Hiddleston's contract ran out. But, you know, that's just real life stuff.
Everybody will forever love him, though. Loki is the lackey. He is the person who brings the Avengers together through his plot to control the human race. And there's references, again, with, you know, Captain America and another dominant figure with like Hitler, and he says, you know, that old man in the crowd says there will always be men like you, and then Captain America states, you know, last time I was in Germany,
he starts like
I'm getting it all messed up,
but he starts like monologuing about Loki because he's like, oh yeah, you remind me of someone, you know, and that person lost too, you know, type deal, but yeah, it like Loki wanted to rule over somebody. Was his goal. He just wanted to be king, and if it had to be king of the humans, you know, then so be it, was his goal. But, you know, he just wanted to be liked. He just went about it the very, very wrong way.
Yep. And we talked about this in the prior episodes, but Mark Ruffalo was the first choice for The Incredible Hulk, the movie that kind of alongside of Iron Man started the whole MCU on its path. Mm-hmm. But they went with Edward Norton just for overall like acting skills and his presence in Hollywood at the time. Mm-hmm. But Mark Ruffalo is now who we know as, you know, the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk. So we see the intro of him. We get so many callbacks to everybody's story and to everybody's movie because they're so recent and they're so relevant to, you know, what they're trying to accomplish. And we see the beginning of the relationship, the very troubling relationship between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers that, you know, it just comes to a head in Civil War. But we get to see the beginning of it here where Tony Stark is also not only battling with Steve Rogers, but the fact that his dad, Howard Stark, believes so much in Steve Rogers and, you know, the maybe not the Avengers initiative then, but like what superheroes could be. And the more and more I watch these, I do like him as a character, and I love Robert Downey Jr. But Tony Stark is an asshole.
Oh yeah, and like, it could also
it's
be
all
from
self-driven.
Like, yeah, well, and it could be from like jealousy, even deep down, because maybe his father really likes Steve Rogers more than his own son. You know, like
well, that's what. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's not what is it? Iron Man 3, which is the next film on our docket, that he discovers that his dad actually did care about him. His work just kind of dominated the majority of his childhood. And you see that. And maybe it's Civil War. There's one of the films where he identifies and finds out that his dad actually did care about him. And he has that moment, okay, like maybe I can wipe the past out and remember my dad for how he was and be who I need to be. But what I keep seeing is him... He, you know, at the end of Iron Man 1, yes, it's a lot of bravado and testosterone when he says, I am Iron Man, you know, and you're all pumped and stoked because he's introducing himself as a superhero. But then throughout every other film, he's like, you know, I saved the world. Wait a second. I've got a problem. I got to step away from everybody else's issues. Mm-hmm. To deal with mine, whereas every other superhero and every other character is literally about the greater good. Yep. Like that is their end. Everybody's end game is the greater good.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what it is. He's just so human.
Mm-hmm. Well, even like Steve, like when they're arguing, you know, take off that suit of armor. What are you? You know, and then like one of the best comebacks though, you know, genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist was his comeback in this classic Tony Stark, you know, where someone thinks they have a gotcha moment and he's like, oh no, I got you. I'm better than everybody. is what
that whole back and forth is one of my favorites, where he's like, put on the suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they get attacked and he's like, put on the suit. And he's like, I'm on it. We also see a bunch of characters just kind of like holding their own. So we see the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. and how they participate in this on the helicarrier. There's a lot of scenes on that ship itself. Yeah. We see Hawkeye kind of like really like becoming Hawkeye. So Jeremy Renner is, even though he is taken over by Loki's staff, mm-hmm. he's still like a pretty dominant force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, you can tell if he's being used as a weapon. He's a really formidable weapon, even though he's just a human who's really, really good with a bow. He just happens to be very, very good with that bow.
Well, he was trained personally by an Olympic archer mm-hmm. to get so good at just, like, pretending to be an archer, which is pretty intense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and it shows that, like, most of his roles he's pretty dedicated to anyway. But whenever it's something physical, he usually goes all out. Like when he was in one of the Bourne movies, he also had a very, very like big physical training regimen that he didn't have to do. You know, he was already in good shape, but he wanted to look like, you know, someone who could be a stone cold killer if he needed to be. And like this, he wanted to be someone who was a really, really good archer, or could be perceived at least. Maybe he didn't go full John Wick, you know, where Keanu Reeves can actually do sports shooting. I don't know if Jeremy Renner could do like sport archery now, if he's that good, because we haven't seen the Facebook video of it, obviously.
Yeah. Still haven't seen the John Wick movies.
Oh, boy.
I know. I got shit from it the other day, but...
Oh, this pains me.
Well, my wife and I host another podcast called Fine, I'll Watch It, which maybe I will get around to watching that, because a lot of people have asked me to see it, and they've said that it's necessary. I do like Keanu Reeves, in spite of him being... I don't want to say he's a Paul Walker, but definitely bringing that Paul Walker-esque type acting to the screen. But I do enjoy him, so I'll watch it. I know he's so committed to the trilogy that he turned down a role either. I just read he turned down a role in Captain Marvel because he was so committed to finishing the John Wick trilogy,
mm-hmm. which
is insane.
Oh, yeah, which, oh God, he was offered, right? Essentially a character in the MCU. So, but with John Wick being so popular, I don't think it's going to come back to bite him. Other actors did when they're like, oh, I don't want to be typecast. Well, guess what? You could have had it all. And you did.
Well, he's doing another Bill and Ted. So I think he'll be okay.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He'll be fine.
Is there a moment in this movie where you were like, yes, they did it right. And this is going to be, this is going to be the starting point of everything great after this.
To me, the big one, I would even say it was like right after they finally like became a team. Like to me, it was like the Chitauri attack when they were like all together. You know, like that revolving camera shot that was circling them when they were finally all together for like the first time, and then you get the classic, you know, that's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry, and a punch.
I want you to explain this to me. I don't understand that statement. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Mm. If you're, I get that he's saying he's so in control of his emotions that his anger's constantly bubbling at the surface, but Mark Ruffalo doesn't come across as that. Neither did Edward Norton.
Well, but you have to remember in the end of, like, the Incredible Hulk, remember, or at the beginning, where he's, like, meditating, in a sense. And so maybe he finally was able to, like, only unleash his anger when he needs to, type thing. Especially, like, that scene from the Incredible Hulk, I think, solidifies that in a little bit, like, of a roundabout way. That, okay, she's trying to focus it to, like, a fine point that he could, like, essentially flip that blade whenever he needs to. Until he gets his ass kicked by Thanos, and then Hulk just is like, nope, I'm not coming out, because you didn't really have the like split personality in the first Avengers movie. It was almost like the Hulk was a tool instead of being a completely separate person like he is in like Thor Ragnarok and in Infinity War. So maybe it's he was in control of the emotion, but then the emotion over the course of the MCU developed into a personality, potentially. And that's why he maybe lost control of it later on.
I would have to... Did I interrupt you, or did you finish your thought on that?
Was finished.
Okay. Okay. Even though I said RDJ and Steve Rogers' relationship, if I'm going to use an RDJ, I'm going to say Chris Evans. But even though Iron Man and Captain America had their beef, and Iron Man is a dick who is, you know, selfish, and Captain America is selfless, I think that is the part of this movie that I enjoyed thoroughly. And I enjoy it throughout the movies that are coming up. It's like that. It's a constant battle between the two to prove what is right. And if I was to fall on one side, it would be Captain America, because of his belief that everybody is good and that the world can be good if just given the right tools and given the right direction. Whereas Robert Downey Jr. is only seen bad, but it's bad that's usually produced by his own, like, his just being. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever, his intelligence or his creations or inventions. So... I loved the banter between the two. And then the quote that's in there, that's my favorite. I'll actually just play this scene right here.
Another Asgardian?
They guys are friendly?
Doesn't matter. If you freeze Loki or kills him, the Tesseract's lost.
Stark, we need a plan of attack.
I have a plan. Attack.
It's that arrogance that Captain Steve Rogers cannot stand in anybody. Mm-hmm. But Iron Man is the person that personifies it for him. And so that's why we see it lead up to Civil War, where it's the two of them, you know, fighting over the goodness that can be had by the Winter Soldier, and what Captain America knew him as, what he knew Bucky Barnes to be, versus Iron Man just thinking like, you know, we have a job to do to stop this person. This person killed my parents, and we're just going to do that. Like, there's no... There's an emotional drive, but like we talked about, he's constantly battling with his emotions, whereas Steve Rogers is pretty even-keeled. He just wants to complete the job that's in front of him so that people can live their lives where the sun comes up every day and the moon sets. So I like that, the beginning of that, of those two, like, just hammering it out with each other.
Yeah, and they, especially since this movie was so successful, you get to finally see that just all come to fruition, because you go, okay, it's only like the pot is only starting to boil in this. You know, it hasn't completely boiled over until Civil War hits, where you have someone that's like, we need to be kept in check. And he's like, no, like, because we're superheroes, we're the ones who need to keep others in check, was like Steve Rogers. Not, no, like, we can't have some government entity telling us what we can and can't do, because we're the ones who are supposed to protect people from, like, oppression and things. So you can totally see the seeds of that being planted, and Marvel just going, oh, please, God, have this movie be successful so we can still do these. And boy, was it successful.
Well, yeah, it was successful, and it was another one, and I'm guessing that all of these movies are plagued with this, mm-hmm. but it was another movie that was plagued with rewriting of the script, mm-hmm. people's interpretation, Marvel digging in, Kevin Feige saying, like, I want to do this. I'm sure at this point, Robert Downey Jr. and some of the other actors that were being, like, that would never leave this universe, mm-hmm. were starting to have their say as well. And so it's this, it's a continuation of, yes, success, but it's also this continuation of people being like, hey, you know, we completely rewrote the script. We're going to go a different direction today. Joss Whedon had access to the script for Captain America, the First Avenger, and some of the ones leading up to it, I think. Or, like, he had his hands on some of the scripts that would lead into the storyline so that he could ensure that the storylines that he was going to continue with didn't have hiccups and would fit into the script that he had already written. So that right there would, as a director of the films leading up to it, would stress me the fuck out.
Oh God. Yeah.
And he also had that, the two of the founding members of Avengers, Ant-Man and the Wasp, they were cut from the script because the film had too many characters, which is just a crazy thing to state in the fact that when we move forward, we just start adding.
And Infinity War's got, you know what, God, God, the final tally was like 38 or something.
Yeah.
Were the characters that we had. And even people were also saying, well, where's this character? Where's this character? And we're like, dude, there's 38 of them. How much more do you want? And
yeah, I read one. Go ahead.
Oh, well.
Go ahead.
Well, and we have this film, you know, that doesn't even have like 10 superheroes. And for its time, it was like, oh, hold on. You guys are getting a little much there. I don't know if people are going to be able to follow this film. And now if you don't have like an ensemble cast for a superhero movie, they're like, what are you guys doing? Or like, did you guys even write a script? What's the matter with you guys?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they have to, there has to be a controlled amount of characters and powers in one movie, just simply for the fact that it, like, everything would be possible if everybody was in this movie. Mm-hmm. So like, you'd have to think of ways to write out their power from preventing catastrophe, mm-hmm. right? Like it, because, you know, Thor comes down and this is an Infinity War. I know I'm skipping way far mm-hmm. ahead, but he comes down with a new Stormbreaker and throws it at Thanos and finally catches to him. But they had to write a completely different storyline where him, Rocket, and Groot are at the dying star with the giant dwarf yeah. to make Stormbreaker so that that time, so it's not, you know, so he wasn't there at the beginning, mm-hmm. you know, like, so it's, and I read a comic book, an Avengers comic book where it had the Celestials, mm-hmm. it had all these characters, and they were all fighting Thanos. And I was just like, yeah, that maybe works in a comic book setting, but definitely not in a movie setting, mm-hmm. because everybody would trump each other.
Oh, I just imagine like Doctor Strange, like imagine if he had, say, like his like Dormammu fight like before the Avengers happen, for example. And became, you know, like the, you know, supreme wizard, basically. And like he would have decimated Loki's forces just by himself, because he could have just created like interdimensional rifts, because they actually had to do that in the comic books. Doctor Strange had to be nerfed. And it was like the first comic book nerfing that had ever happened, because he got so powerful in the 60s of comic books that literally no villain could defeat him. It was impossible. Based on his powers. And so I think we would have that situation if you brought a whole bunch of characters into this movie just based on Loki's power level. Because he's not a very powerful person. I mean, he gets, like, absolutely shellacked by the Hulk, which is one of the best scenes, with him just pummeling him into the ground and then going puny god.
Yeah. But he goes blow for blow with Steve Rogers mm-hmm. in Germany, yeah. which was something I mentioned around how the inconsistency in powers. I mean, that's a different story altogether, but anyway.
Yeah, like Loki can fight a super soldier, but as soon as a gamma radiation human being, you know, gets him, all of a sudden it's all over. It's like all bets are off.
Yeah, dude, he's crushed.
but one of the best scenes in the movie to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, cool, because they continue to reference mm-hmm. it. And that this movie has so many other references and so many continued storylines moving forward and relationships. That's another reason I love it as mm-hmm. well. Just the relationship between, as I mentioned, Iron Man mm-hmm. and
so much.
Captain America. Yep. Hulk and Thor, like everybody. Even, with Steve Coulson, the member of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. Was it Steve Coulson?
I think
Coulson?
It was, yeah. Or I think it was Coulson, at least.
Coulson, yeah. He like setting up like his love for his job and Nick Fury planting the bloody cards on him. I mean, there's just so many, you get to see these characters and how they're being developed as whether I know Nick Fury did it because he said they needed a little push. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you get to see their main motivations. Let's continue on with this trivia here. So Tom Hiddleston revealed in an interview that the code name for the film. Do you know this?
No, I do not.
The code name for the film when it was in its production phase was Group Hug.
Which makes sense.
Which, yeah, that makes a lot mm-hmm. of sense. This, you mentioned this movie was very successful. Now, as far as dollars go, it was the highest grossing film of all time, not directed by James Cameron.
Yeah. And was the first MCU movie to hit a billion as well. No other Marvel movie up until that point had actually grossed $1 billion yet.
Yeah, a very successful risk.
Mm-hmm.
It was third under Titanic. And then Avatar, And then it was replaced by Star Wars The Force Awakens in 2015. But at the time, that was a pretty incredible feat.
Yep, I think it also had the biggest opening weekend ever, though. And I don't know if another movie has topped that, or unless Star Wars had. But it had like a $220 or like $230 million opening weekend, which was unheard of back at that time. And so I think it still holds on to the title of that, I believe. I don't know if in like Infinity War or if Star Wars has toppled it. Personally,
well, it doesn't matter. Everything you say is fact. So
oh, yeah, there we go.
Everything that you say is concrete, and we're just gonna go. Oh, with
okay,
it.
Yeah, let's do it that way.
According to Joss Whedon, once again, the director of this, it was his decision to include Thanos in the post-credit scene. For him, he was the most powerful and fascinating Marvel villain. He's the great granddaddy of badasses, is a quote from him. He's in love with death, and he thinks that's so cute. Somebody had to be in control and had to be behind Loki's work. And I was like, it's got to be Thanos. So a lot of what we know now is based on not the direction that comics or any sort of like story arc that they were supposed to follow. All of this was created. So this is in essence somebody's interpretation or somebody's version of this universe. And so this story that was written, like they injected Thanos and Thanos became the main villain that we are now facing in Endgame. Mm-hmm. So it's, but he was introduced here, but I'm pretty sure that at this point they had no idea. Maybe I'm wrong. They had no idea Infinity War was happening and that Thanos was going to be the one yielding the gauntlet, even though that is in a one of the comic book storylines. But it like at this point, I think that they were just like trying to make movies. And, you know, Joss Whedon was like, let's put in Thanos.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like that was just that was the seed that was needed, especially, say, if they were doing more storylines. They could go, oh, hey, like, we've already got Thanos in that final shot. Like, let's use him now. Or let's prepare him.
Now, did I miss it? Or was the Stan Lee cameo, he's being interviewed. He's one of the people being interviewed at the end shots where they're going through the city and they're talking to everybody about how indifferent the city is around the actions of the Avengers. He was in it. Mm-hmm. I know that. Oh, yeah. I just didn't know if that was his. So that was his scene. Yeah, it just seems so small.
Yeah, because let's see. I'm looking at it. Oh, yeah. 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 Because he's being interviewed. And then when they're talking about superheroes, he goes, superheroes in New York? Give me a break.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess it's not that small. It just seems so going against that formula that we talked about in the last one. But he's not a mistaken identity either in this one, and that's the theme that goes on from here. I thought there would be some like bigger moment where he was an actual character versus just like someone who was on a screen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you know the film originally had an R rating? It like Marvel had to submit the film 3 times to the MPAA to find
why. What was the R rating?
So Coulson's death scene. So originally Loki's staff was bursting through his chest when he was dead, and a gruesome like sound effect was added, but that got the film an R rating because of that. So they had to redo that scene a little bit in order to keep it PG-13.
Yeah, it's not that gruesome.
Mm-mm. Oh no,
I mean it's just the staff like kind of melting through him. But
especially now that we're in a post Deadpool world. For our ratings, like that's a pretty
so is
tame.
He dead?
No, so like in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. you figure out that he's alive because the from what I remember, like the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents can like clone each other and like get all their memories back and everything. It was some I'm trying to remember like the tech, but like Coulson like comes back because
okay. So when he said when he says they needed a little push. Mm-hmm. He was also lying when he said the paramedics are here. They called it.
Mm-hmm.
So he okay. I just assumed he was dead because I don't remember seeing him again. I guess we'll find out as we move forward. But I can't. No, I don't remember seeing him again. So, but in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you said that.
Yeah. He is back in that TV series.
Do you have any other trivia before I go to the post credit scene?
Let's see. I don't know if. It was like good trivia that I've gotten in my notes. I mean, the like shawarma, like scene where, or, well, not scene, but where he's like, hey, like, let's just take a day off. You know, there's a shawarma joint like down there that I want to try. That was all improvised by Robert Downey Jr. So there was a lot of improv in this movie. Actually. Well,
so that's the post. That's the post credit scene, and that's there when they're eating shawarma. The Steve Rogers is covering his mouth. He's the only one not eating because he was growing a beard for your one of your favorite movies, Snowpiercer. So he's like covering his face. And if you look at it, I mean, they did a way better job
than Batman what they did with.
Yes. And, you know, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I never noticed it. I just thought his face looked weird. Mm-hmm. And this is in the Batman vs. Superman. And I was like, God, his face looks so weird. But, like, you know, I remember him with a mustache and Fallout. So maybe it's not that weird. And then, I'm looking at it just going, this is terrible. Yeah. But it took me at least two times watching it to see it. In this one, he's got his mouth over his, or his hand over his mouth. In the shawarma scene, so you don't see it at all.
It actually hit it well, and it makes you think, like, oh, okay, was Captain America just too depressed about the whole situation to eat? You know, is essentially how they can play it off. Is he's just super sad by everything that went down? There was a this still pertains to the movie, but actually, when I was in college, there was actually a study that was done on what it would be like the actual damage from like the Chitauri attack on New York.
Oh, for real?
Oh, yeah. So someone wrote this. It was like a 34-page PDF that I had read. It was like full-on like empirical analysis on it. And I'm trying to remember. I don't know if it was like $200 billion or like $800 billion in damages. That went.
Oh, they fucked the city up.
Oh, yeah. Because they also talked about the cleanup and everything as well, how much money that costs, because you got to get those big-ass monsters that died, you know, up and out. And so, like, you got to get machines to cut them up and everything. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They basically looked at it scene for scene. They're like, okay, that building got damaged, that building got damaged. And they tallied up the money. Somebody got paid to do that. So
I mean, they mention it in one, like, one movie, one of the collective films where they just talk about how much, I think it's Civil War, where how much damage they do to everything. And, like, it is something that, you know, you write off when you're watching a movie and just like, wow, they saved the planet. But they destroyed New York. Yep. I mean, it is gone. And then Thor... I think when we come back, I think it's the is it the Dark World where they destroy DC, and then the Incredible Hulk destroyed Harlem, which he references in this movie as well. But they do so much damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and it ain't cheap to fix that, and it's not like you. It goes like, okay, 2 weeks later, and then everything's all fine. That'll take like years.
That's that Tony Stark money.
Oh God! Oh yeah. You know. Well, maybe he creates new machines to clean up. Who knows? He probably did.
Well, note in Spider-Man: Homecoming, Michael Keaton's company is cleaning up after the Chitauri, and then the government.
Yeah, that's how they.
The government comes and does it.
Yeah, that's how they grounded the everything like in the world for that. Now I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's so brief. I was thinking about it the other day after watching this.
But it was quite clever.
This movie. Yes. Oh, absolutely. That's another one that I love. I could do without the narration, like unsteady cam at the beginning, but I digress. So this is the sixth and final chapter of Phase 1 in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The next movie that you and I will be discussing, as I have already mentioned, is Iron Man 3, which from what I can remember, and I think I've watched it recently, I did enjoy this movie, and we've talked about how the Iron Man movies can stand alone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kyle, I once again appreciate you being able to sit down with me and talk about these fantastic films. And for now, Kyle, you will say...
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And good luck to everyone out there. And I will just say bye-bye. Peace.
Ta-ta.